Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 43 degrees overcast and some wind in the forecast today. It's Friday, October 28th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Some seafood sold in the Pacific Northwest isn't what it seems. Mislabeled fish is more common than you might think, according to the few cops trying to make sure you get the species you paid for. Now, those who are on patrol are looking for higher penalties to deter fish cheaters. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports from Seattle.
Washington Fish and Wildlife Officer Eric Olson trained to become a game warden, but his job has also turned him into a seafood connoisseur.
Yeah, see that spot pattern?
Mm-hmm.
See how it's just one after another? See that? It's just...
Like a corn?
Yeah, that is not...
On a recent morning, Olson drops in unannounced at the seafood counters of half a dozen stores and markets in Seattle. He's on the lookout for misbranded fish, which he can sometimes spot with the naked eye. Other times, it takes a lot more sleuthing.
It's kind of hard when it doesn't have the head on it and everything else.
Funny business on the label is also a tip-off. At an Asian market, the manager gets a gentle scolding for omissions.
I know that it's probably farm-raised, okay, Atlantic salmon, but you need to actually say that on there.
Oh,
okay.
So say on the label, you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, on the label that actually, so the consumer can make an informed decision.
Olson could write a ticket, but the contrite manager gets off with a verbal warning. The officer saves his ire for bigger fish, you might say.
Quite honestly, all this stuff, it's always about the money. Always about the bottom line.
The ill-gotten profit comes from misbranding farmed salmon as more expensive wild-caught, or swapping among species, say, sockeye for king, or a switcheroo like cheap imported Greenland turbot for Pacific halibut. Those are all examples of rip-offs that state or federal agents have busted in this region.
Can you get the manager for me?
Olson figures about 15% of seafood in the marketplace is masquerading as something other than what it actually is. His is in the middle range of various estimates. For the past 3 years, a University of Washington Tacoma environmental scientist has assigned students to run DNA tests on salmon sold at retail and in South Puget Sound restaurants. Professor Erica Klein says more than a third, 38% of the restaurant samples came back as a different species than what the menu said.
So that was the really high shocker.
By contrast, Klein says the vast majority of tested grocery stores were honest.
You know, there could be a number of things going on there. I think grocery stores probably are mostly larger chains and are pretty heavily scrutinized.
Klein says once a fillet is cooked and sauced in a restaurant, it's hard to prove fraud without a DNA test. Klein says when she dines out, she asks about where the fish came from. If she gets a dodgy answer, she orders something else. In Washington State, the deputy chief of the Fish and Wildlife Police is looking for a legislator who will champion higher penalties. Mike Sensi says seafood mislabeling is currently a misdemeanor with a maximum $200 fine for the first offense.
If you're at a retail level and you've got a mislabeled package or two, that might be enough deterrent. But if you're dealing in tens of thousands of dollars in seafood products, major fraud involved there, that would more than be the cost of doing business. That's not a disincentive to discontinue that kind of practice or fraud.
The feds will sometimes throw the book at big-time bait-and-switchers. Sensi separately has to stave off budget cuts to the few cops on this beat. In Salem, a state police lieutenant says Oregon Fish and Wildlife troopers have the authority, but rarely the time, to conduct inspections for misbranding. Earlier this year, a report from the conservation group Oceana called the national enforcement effort against fish fraud virtually non-existent. I'm Tom Bonsi in Seattle.
What inspires a person to twist a balloon into the shape of a moose, or take photos of someone vacuuming a glacier, or run for mayor in a gorilla suit? Those questions come to mind when you're talking about Jeff Brown. The Juno artist, musician, author, and entertainer was recently recognized for his lifetime achievements as part of the Governor's Awards for the Arts. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld takes a look at Brown's work and motivation.
Here's what Jeff Brown sounds like when he's entertaining kids.
The great trick is when I'm going to attempt to move the sun from the box to the sky using my special magical powers, and I'm going to do it on the count of three. One, two, three. Alaska Deborah.
or making balloon animals.
There you are, to see if it fits. It fits!
Or running for mayor in a monkey suit.
Why vote? I'll vote for a gorilla. Who else?
Brown, a longtime Alaskan, also produces radio shows, writes how-to books, puts out parody postcards and publications, volunteers with community groups. The list goes on.
Where does he come up with those ideas?
That's Juno Arts and Humanities Council Executive Director Nancy DeCherney.
I don't think there's anybody in this town that can summarize everything that Jeff did.
But let's try. Brown says it all started in high school when he heard the experimental comedy group Fire Sign Theater.
They made it possible for me to think that it would be possible itself to go to a radio station and start volunteering.
He moved to Juneau as a Coast Guard medic in 1975. Soon, he came across fledgling public radio station, KTOO.
And they were having a fundraising marathon, and I said, can I help out? And they said, sure. And then they asked for volunteers to be on the radio, and I said, sure. And I've been saying yes ever since.
Brown went on to work for the station and its TV affiliate. He also became a key member of an improvisational theater group, a historical play for tourists, and a news parody show. As time passed, he also became a recognized artist, working with stained glass, manipulated photographs, and assembled found objects. He's even created museum exhibits of Alaska mazes and board games.
He's one of those rare individuals that seem to have no boundaries in regard to medium.
Bob Banghart is chief curator of the Alaska State Museums. He's also a musician and founder of the Alaska Folk Festival, another place Brown has been active.
At any various year, he was engaged in setting together programming, doing the newsletter, organizing the workshops, organizing the MCs, or being the MC, or being on stage playing. I mean, he's done everything there is to do, probably with the exception of selling hot dogs, but we've never sold hot dogs.
Then there's the kid-focused efforts. Brown's produced a nationally distributed children's radio program, toured an Alaska magic show, and was half of the kids' music duo, The Wigglers. One of Brown's most recent efforts has been Real Alaskan magazine. The 64-page, full-color, glossy humor publication parodies images and stories from the North. He says people have been more than willing to help.
I can call up somebody in Sitka and I could say, will you find a couple of ballet students and put them up in tutus and rubber boots and have them posing at Swan Lake? And they said, sure, no problem.
Brown's Lifetime Achievement Award comes at a time when he's having to slow down. He has Parkinson's disease, a brain disorder that causes shaking, stuttering, and makes movement difficult. But he's still being creative.
I can do the same things that I've done before. It just takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of discouraging that way, but it's one of those things you just have to muscle through.
He's a little self-conscious about the Lifetime Achievement Arts Award and says lots of other people have done as much or more. And it hasn't changed his goal.
I guess it all centers around making people happy, and that's kind of what I've given myself as a job in life, is to make people's lives a little bit better, or making them laugh or making them smile, just making their lives just a little bit easier to live.
One, staring into my eyes. Two and a quarter. 2 7/8. 2 15/16. And 3, and it's gone completely from the box. Ladies and gentlemen, that's my version of Raven. See you in the daylight from the box. Thank you.
Friends and colleagues are planning a community celebration of his award and works. It's at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, October 31st. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You can see some of Brown's creative efforts through links posted on our website with this story at kcaw.org. And in the interest of disclosure, reporter Ed Schoenfeld, like a lot of Juneau residents, has been part of some of Brown's creative efforts. No compromise following a meeting of Juneau and Petersburg officials over a land dispute between the two communities, but the discussion between city leaders is being described as productive. The city of Petersburg is seeking to form a borough that includes lands previously identified for annexation by Juneau. Petersburg Deputy Mayor Mark Jensen and Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello met Wednesday to discuss the possibility of a compromise boundary. Botello called the meeting cordial, but said Juneau still wants to make its case in writing to the state's local boundary commission before further talk of compromise.
We thought it would be most valuable for Petersburg to have a chance to review the basis for our assertion that the disputed area is one that most appropriately belongs to the city and borough of Juneau.
The area in question includes all land from the southern Juneau borough boundary and east to the Canadian border. The Tracy Arm, Ford's Terror Wilderness, and Endicott Arm, as well as Holcomb, Windham, and Hobart Bays. Juneau filed a 74-page brief with the Boundary Commission on Wednesday, opposing Petersburg's claim over those lands. On Monday, the Juneau Assembly plans to approve an annexation petition seeking to officially stake claim over the area, but Botello says that doesn't rule out some sort of compromise in the future.
Certainly. We're going to be prepared to have discussions as would be appropriate between neighboring communities.
Juneau Native Corporation Goldbelt owns 30,000 acres at Hobart Bay in the contested area. In his latest comment to the Boundary Commission, Goldbelt Vice President Derek Duncan said the company prefers the land remain outside any incorporated borough. He said Goldbelt would continue to study its options and make its borough preference known soon. The University of Alaska is hoping to help students stay on track to graduate within 4 years. The Stay on Track campaign lays out choices students must make to earn a bachelor's degree within 4 years. Those include taking 30 credit hours a year, registering for needed classes early, choosing and sticking with a major by the third semester, and keeping up grades. The university system says the campaign will be advertised on such things as posters, postcards to the families of freshmen, and inserts in student newspapers. It says students who sign up for a Finish in 4 promise and successfully complete 15 credits next year will be entered to win prizes. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for locally windy conditions with rain, highs around 48, northeast winds 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 40. This is KCAW in Sitka.